Had a good day today, Unplugged Army. Had a good day. Thank you for the notes. Thank you for the encouragement. The Unplugged Army is marching forward. No longer taking on water. At least I think. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Doug Franz. Thank you for listening to Doug Franz Unplugged. Whenever it is that you decide to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. You found the only podcast in the world that is totally devoted to covering the four major sports franchises of one American city. That is Phoenix, Arizona. My meetings went very well. My meetings went very, very well today. Had lunch at Bell's Nashville Kitchen yesterday. That was delicious. Janelle the Whiskey Wizard was there and had a great conversation with her. I was asked by the person I ate lunch with not to tell anybody that I ate lunch with him. And I will hold true to that. But boy, did I enjoy it. And I hope that there's something there, although probably not. But I'm hoping. And the meeting before lunch was with the important people of a company that is interested in me doing a Cardinals podcast. And I'm interested in continue to listen. We're still looking at big picture stuff, and we need to get kind of narrowed down to a more similar, to a smaller focus. And I don't know if that's, you know, that's got to come kind of fast. But I'm looking forward to it. I think there's something there. I like the people that I met with. I'll tell you more if I specifically agree to something. But at the same time, I want to seriously protect the people that are driving this podcast now. The people that are making Unplugged go. Bell's Nashville Kitchen, Rosati's at Ray and McQueen, Ideal Home Loans, Parker and Sons, Fushaw Media, and Burrito Express. Without them, you know, this isn't here. So I can't just go full bore on another one and not take great care of these guys that are with me. So that's, but if I totally go in the direction of the other company, you know, they're going to want to say, hey, if you want those guys to advertise on our podcast, we want a cut. And I'm going to be like, I don't want to give you a cut, but I just want to promote them. How do I do both? So there's a lot of things to work out to make my conscience feel like I'm doing the right thing, both for my family, but I don't want to be, again, on the LIV Golf Tour and abandon the responsibilities and the convictions and the commitments I've already made to other people. So I'm kind of balancing those things, and we'll see how it all plays out, but I'm getting excited. Also, I made up a very important list that I'm holding right now in my hand. And boy, this is exciting. I didn't realize the importance of this here in the Franz household, but we have a new sign. We have a new sign in our house. The new sign says, I'm outdoorsy. I like to drink wine on the patio. That's the newest sign. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen that Progressive commercial about the signs. I live in that house. That's my house where they filmed that commercial, if you didn't know. We are currently now this is just the bottom floor. I didn't venture to go upstairs. But we're now at a total of 16 signs that are in the house. 16 signs. We have the first one I told you about, I'm outdoorsy. We have the, we do not remember the day, we remember the moment. That's on a clock though, but I still count that as a sign because you couldn't just have a clock. You had to have a message on the clock. We have a sign of be the exception. It's number 3. Blessed. Miracles happen. Number 6 gets kind of wordy. Friends. It's not where you go or what you do. It's who is besides you that counts. 7. Home is where your story begins. Now, 8, 9, 10 is just a one-word sign, but they're up above the kitchen cabinets. And it says, wine, family, love. What's interesting is when you read it from left to right, my wife put wine first. So wine, then family, then love. But they're separated that you could act like there's periods in there. So it's three separate signs, three separate cabinet locations. But of course, if you notice one sign, you then read it from left to right, and then you get wine, family, love. Sign number 11 is welcome to our house. Now that's nice. That's nice. We want you to feel welcome in our house. The weird thing about that sign, though, that's under the cabinets beside the toaster. It's above the toaster. So you have to enter past the Jesus room, past the game room, enter the kitchen, kind of duck your head if you have any height to you under the cabinets. And as you're reaching to put something in the toaster, you are now welcomed to our home. We have sign number 12, good times, fine wine. We have number 13, cooking with love. 14, heart of the home. 15 is a saga of sorts. This is all one sign for sign 15. Enjoy the little things. Choose happiness. Work hard and be kind. Love, live every moment. I know, I think it's actually love is one. Work hard and be kind is a line. Then another line is just love. And another one is live every moment. And then sign number 16 is faith makes things possible. So there's the, we now have 16. We're up to 16. I'll make sure I report back to you when we get to 17. If I would love to hear from you if on your contest, what is the, please tweet me at Unplugged Doug today, or you can post it on Instagram, maybe even take a picture of it on Instagram and post it. Either way, of your sign, of your favorite sign in your life, in your house, that that clearly guides you and gives you direction. Because I don't know where we would be in our house without those lovely, lovely signs. You'd think if I was a great husband, I would notice signs in stores, and then I would buy my wife more signs. Because it's clearly, and I didn't realize this, we didn't have enough signs. Like when we were sitting at only 15, and we already have three wine signs. My wife saw this wine sign and thought, I need another wine sign. Unless, of course, it was a gift. Considering our financial situation, I hope it was a gift. And if it was a gift, hey, that's great. That's great. That's great. But maybe we could put it away from other wine signs. Because in one room, there are now three wine signs. Not counting the wine sign itself. Three signs about wine, and then a sign that is just wine. That doesn't include the plastic wine bottle that is filled with corks of said wine. Now, I realize if there was a Jennifer Franz podcast, there could be a kilt lifter conversation about why does the fridge have to look like it does with 20 kilt lifters in it. And I just say, hey, just give me a second, and there won't be 20 kilt lifters in it. So please, partake in the sign off 2022 sweepstakes and send me your sign and let me know what your signs look like in your house. I would love to see them or read them, and maybe I'll read your signs coming up. All right, today is a feedback day on Doug Franz Unplugged, in which I'm going to go through a lot of the feedback that you've given me over the last couple weeks about how to make the show better, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, and then answer any specific sports questions that you have. And I also have quite a bit of college football stuff and a little bit of NBA and a little bit of Cardinals. So you would think it'd be a slow show, and it's not. We have plenty. It's up next on Doug Franz Unplugged. That's a sign we're going to commercial. One sign I don't have for you is when interest rates will go back to normal. 602-899-7000 is the phone number for Ideal Home Loans. 602-899-7000. Ideal Home Loans has the mortgage on my home. I'm the one that invented the phrase that they use in all of their advertising. First they listen, then they lend. The reason why I invented it is because that's how they treated me when I went through a refinance. Well, I can understand if you're a little nervous right now with interest rates being so high. Let me tell you two reasons why I still think you should call Ideal Home Loans. Number one, they have an interest rate guarantee that 6 months after your loan closes, they begin monitoring interest rates. So if they go down more than a half a percentage point, they contact you and waive all lender fees to offer you a new mortgage. And then the other reason to do it is if you're in credit card debt. If you're in credit card debt, I'm telling you, I don't care what interest rates are on your home mortgage. They are going to be dramatically better than what they are on those credit cards. Get yourself out of that debt. Reset your life. Call Ideal Home Loans. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com. Going to start with Suns, and this is something that hit the news cycle sometime, I would say, extremely late morning, maybe midday yesterday. But it didn't get a lot of run. So there's a chance you saw it. There's a chance you did it. You didn't. But Goran Dragic is now a member of the Chicago Bulls. And Goran was a guest on a Slovenian podcast that supposedly is very popular. It's called Dvokorak. Hopefully I came close to saying that correctly. And sorry to Mr. Dvokorak if I butchered your name. But he's on that podcast, and then NBA Reddit translated it for everybody, and he was talking about Robert Sarver. And listen, Robert Sarver's getting ripped like crazy for the DeAndre Ayton situation of why wouldn't you have just paid him the max that he could have received from you, which is 5 years, 170, versus 4 years, 130, that you just simply matched from the Pacers. So he's still a max player, but you could have given him more. I don't abide by the theory of ripping Robert for that one. I don't. Because isn't it a fair and legitimate conversation to have that DeAndre Ayton is not a max player? Now, a lot of people say, well, where else are you going to get those points and rebounds? Okay, I'm not saying he's not good, but max? Really? I don't think he's a max player. The Pacers proved me wrong. They're paying him as the max, so the Suns match it. I don't think that's a game of just being cheap. I think that's the rules. And Devin Booker has done enough to earn a max deal. And Robert Sarver had already given a rookie contract extension to Mikal Bridges. That shows when you work hard and you do so many things, Robert Sarver did the right thing there. So I think Robert, listen, in this town, although I'd rather, you know, still be working at the old station and I'd rather you listen to me every morning more than anybody else, I always do want to give credit where it's due. And the only person that's ever been, I think more, I guess fair is the term, but obviously that's opinionated in my part. The only person that has tried to hold Robert Sarver as accountable as I have is Dan Bickley. And so I always want to give credit to other people, even when it kind of hurts me because I'd rather you be listening to me than them. I fully admit that. But Robert Sarver, I'll be the first one to step up and rip him for anything. But I don't think it's fair to rip him for the DeAndre Ayton thing at all. So I wanted to set the stage for that based on what Goran Dragic said on this podcast. He said he being, okay, that was bad antecedents. The first he was Dragic. So let's start there. Dragic said Robert Sarver came into the gym and said he is so happy, actually happy, Dragic said of an interaction with Sarver about missing the 2014 All-Star game. And so I asked him, why are you so happy? And he told me that it's because he doesn't have to pay me $1 million bonus. And I was like, what kind of owner doesn't want his own player to make the All-Star team? After that, I said to myself, I really don't see myself being in this place any longer. Now, if we go back to that time, that was the strange time where the Suns tried the 3-point guard kind of deal. And somehow, no, that was, at first it was 2-point guards. Then it became 3-point guards. But Goran was the only one that was doing anything. Eric Bledsoe's at the hairstylist, blah, blah, blah. And Goran was the one that was trying to keep it together. And I remember when Goran requested a trade, everybody flipped out. But think about how poorly they used Goran. So you have that comment from Robert Sarver, and then you have the hiring of two other point guards when everybody's supposed to be, anybody that's supposed to be a point guard is supposed to be an alpha male. And now you got three of them? But let's focus on that comment. I certainly cannot verify that Robert Sarver said that. But I can tell you after millions upon millions of dealings with a lot of people in and around the Suns who have told me stories about Robert Sarver. That story plays exactly into the Robert Sarver that people have talked to me about. And this one is not shocking at all. Yet it is unbelievably shocking in its stupidity. And that's what's so weird about Robert Sarver. Robert Sarver is a very, very smart man. And I've had several different interactions with him, one argument, and several interactions with him. Sometimes he's treated me very fairly, and sometimes he's been kind of a dismissive jerk to me, and other times he has been very friendly, actually. It's very strange, to be quite honest. And that reaction is in him, I swear he thinks that was funny, and he thinks that's a funny joke. And he's too clueless to realize any level of human interaction, of how that $1 million doesn't really affect him, but what it could have done for Goran at that stage of his life. But number two, that you're, in a sense, openly rooting against one of your players. You're actually rooting against one of your players. And you're so blind to, if Goran goes to the All-Star game, what does that do for Suns recruiting? What happens if a bunch of players really like him? I totally believe there were a lot of players at this year's All-Star game that saw Devin Booker, and more specifically in this one, Monty Williams. Devin Booker more so in the Olympics, even though he was an All-Star the year before. But they look at at Monty Williams and different Suns players and say, I want to be a part of that. I honestly believe players say that. I want to be a part of that. So Monty Williams, James Jones, Devin Booker, Chris Paul are overcoming Robert Sarver. They're winning in spite of Robert Sarver. But this story by Goran Dragic that's part of a Slovenian podcast, if you didn't hear it yesterday, I think it's just going to grow throughout the day today. I think it's going to be a bigger and bigger deal as more and more people find out this story. And it is perfect Robert Sarver to a T. Perfect. And I'm really wondering what the NBA is waiting for in their investigation. What happens a lot in these investigations is the investigation takes about, I would say, 50 to 60% of the time the league pretends it really does. This investigation, I'm not reporting, I'm just explaining. With knowledge of how things work in the past, not claiming this specific time is the occurrence that's happening. But I would bet this report was probably done at some point after Christmas, but before the end of February or before the beginning of February. So at some point in January, I'm betting this was done. Maybe I'm wrong and it took all the way until March. Maybe. But I guarantee you, the last 2 to 3 months have all been spent negotiating punishment. Guaranteed. There's no doubt in my mind that's what this is about. Because you know full well, if you go after Robert Sarver and try to take the team from him, he will sue like crazy. And other owners are probably afraid of, if I vote him out, what happens if they look at me? I think it's the only reason why Daniel Snyder is still in the NFL, is because the league knows that nut job will file lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. And who in their right mind in the NFL is going to act like they don't have some of the same issues going on in their workplace over the last 15 years that Daniel Snyder does? So they don't want the scrutiny of people looking at all of their stuff. So how do you vote on somebody you know needs to be voted out without having those same guidelines affect your franchise? And you look at a Robert Sarver, and I'm wondering how much is the same in the NBA with other teams. And rich people don't like to find fault in other rich people in front of everybody else. they'll certainly find fault behind closed doors. They're human. You know, they'll rip on other rich people like crazy and say all the things they're doing wrong. But in a situation like this, in the small collective group that is NBA ownership, I guarantee you that they're being very, very cautious of how far can we go in punishing him so the general public will accept it and Robert won't sue. What I think they should do, but they don't have the heart to do this. I'm going by morals, not by, you know, what they're afraid of from a lawsuit. I would not strip the team entirely from Robert Sarver, but I would force him to sell enough of his shares of the team that he is no longer the general managing partner. And there would be a new general managing partner. So therefore, we're not going to make you not own the team, but you're no longer going to be remotely the face of the team, and you're going to be a minority owner within the team, and therefore we can kind of have more control over the situation. And he'll make plenty of money on it. And if it's money that you want, go ahead. Do I think Robert would ever actually sell the team without the NBA forcing him to? No, I don't. And a lot of people have always said, if he's this money guy, you know, why wouldn't he sell? Why wouldn't he sell? I think there's one thing that obsesses Robert Sarver more than ever, winning a championship ever is an obsession. And that is to be able to argue logically he's better than Jerry Colangelo. I totally believe that. I believe that he thinks in his mind he saved the Suns. Jerry Colangelo believed in spending beyond the means of the franchise, feeling that your desire to see a winner would bring you to the games, and that the worth of the franchise would go up, and then that's where your profit is. And he thought eventually, by winning, the profits will come. Robert Sarver, I'm guessing, more than likely believes, when I bought this team, it was in terrible debt, and I saved the franchise, and I don't get the credit like Jerry does, and I'm upset about it. So asking him to sell, even those of you that say, hey, he makes all this money and all he cares about is money, and now he's going to make 10 times his investment, isn't he going to be happy about that? No, because he doesn't need the money. What he needs is the recognition of he's just as good as Jerry. And even though you and I will never give him that recognition ever, in his mind, winning a championship does, because Jerry never did in basketball. Of course, Jerry did in baseball. But since Jerry never won a championship in basketball, then Robert Sarver would say, now I belong in the Ring of Honor. And he thrives on that. He wants to be able to say, I told you so to everybody. So when you ask him to sell, you're asking a billionaire to quit. You're asking a billionaire to put his tail between his legs and basically say, I'm not Jerry Colangelo. When every billionaire in the world always thinks I can just buy my way to the top. That's what's so weird about these human beings, most of them, not all, that own sports franchises. Take Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers. I mean, he just rifles through people all the time in the front office. And you just think, well, we should have won by now. But you've done nothing to actually build a winner. And I look at Robert Sarver and say, you didn't do anything. That team that you inherited from Jerry Colangelo and Brian Colangelo is the team that dominated from the beginning of your ownership until the end of the Amari Stoudemire regime, when you actually told Amari, we've got a litany of guys behind you to replace you. And then remember, we had five small forwards all at the same time. That was the Hakeem Warrick, Josh Childress, Hidu Turkoglu. Gosh, there were a couple more. I can't remember all of them. Man, was that a terrible time. That's Robert Sarver. And now we hear this story from Goran Dragic. It is embarrassing, but I don't think the NBA has the courage to take him on. And when I say courage, take that for what it means. I mean, if the NBA had the courage and really cared about workplace environment and promoting women from within and empowering women as they claim to in an upfront way, in an out front way, then Robert Sarver would no longer be the owner, right? Unless all of those stories are untrue, unless every single one of them are untrue. If that's the case, hey, then we should all be standing up and supporting Robert Sarver. I mean, really, what man falsely accused, not even in a court of law, should lose his possession? How ridiculous is that? But when I read that ESPN report about Robert Sarver, a lot of those quotes that were attributed to him sounded exactly like something he would say. And then, but that's just one man's guess. If I know how public relations work, I'm going to go with August 5th. I'll call my shot. August 5th is the date that we'll find out about Robert Sarver. Here's why. August 2nd is Major League Baseball's trade deadline. So you'll have a lot of hype going into August 2nd. That rolls right into August 5th, which is the NFL's Hall of Fame game. So now you've got all the excitement of football being back. And then August 6th, a Saturday, is the actual NFL Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. So if you drop the Sarver news on August 5th, you've got the residual effect of the trade deadline. You've got people getting excited for football's return and paying attention to the Hall of Fame game. And you're a long ways off from the start of your season, and you're in the biggest dead time there is in the NFL. Plus, you're doing it on a Friday. You do it Friday after lunch, and a couple hours later, the Hall of Fame game starts. And then the news cycle moves, and by the time Monday rolls around, the rest of the country doesn't care much. Now, it'll still be, of course, an enormous story in Phoenix, no matter what. But what the NBA wants to avoid, truthfully, is they want to punish him hard enough that the outrage for the length of suspension or the fine or whatever happens is as minimal as they can get away with without getting sued by Robert Sarver. They just want to find that balance. Where's the least resistance from Robert Sarver and least resistance from the fans? That's what they're looking for. They don't care about a moral high ground. I think I've nailed that. So there's versus Vegas for you. I'm setting the date as August 5th when we find out about the Suns. No other huge Suns news. Local NBA news, James Harden signed a two-year deal, about $68 million with the 76ers to stay in Philly. And then I guess I should talk Steph Curry and the ESPYs. I did watch the ESPYs last night. It's a show that I, for the most part, I don't enjoy it. But there are parts I loved. The monologue by Steph Curry to start was one of the worst ones we've ever had in stand-up history. I don't blame him. I always blame writers for that. But, you know, he's not Peyton Manning. He didn't have that same sense of delivery. He wasn't a bomb, but it was boring. I thought, if you saw the Pat Tillman Courage Award, boy, every year, I don't make it through that. That was beautiful. And the Muhammad Ali Award to Albert Pujols was unbelievably inspiring. That was fantastic. But the most gripping for me was the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. They gave it to Vitali Klitschko, the former heavyweight champion of the world, who's the mayor of Kyiv, Ukraine. Wow. Wow. I mean, it almost freezes you in your tracks of just how evil the Russian regime is when you're seeing some of those videos. And to see a millionaire about 100 times over walking around in a bulletproof vest leading people in his home city and his home country. That was awesome. I mean, that was awesome. So that was very, very powerful to watch that. I did appreciate Steph Curry wearing the BG jersey and talking about bringing Brittany Griner home. I don't know why this is so hard, though. I've never understood this about the Brittany Griner thing. It seems like one side of people, one group of people, are highly offended. Anybody is going crazy to bring Brittany home. But another side, and I say going crazy upset because of other Americans that are wrongfully detained, and why should Brittany Griner be getting all this attention? Another side that looks at it as that should be the sole focus of the President of the United States. Like there's nothing else for the President of the United States to be doing than getting Brittany Griner home. And I don't know if I'm a bad person. I don't know if I'm politically incorrect, politically insensitive. If this is the type of opinion that would get me kicked off of sports talk radio, I just don't understand why those thoughts can't be married together. In standing for Brittany Griner, as I totally believe anybody should, why not a mention of Paul Whelan? I mean, there's a segment of society that the split second you don't include something that they say needs to be included, then everybody is somehow against inclusion as soon as you do something. Whether it's a mistake, whether it's a willing, you know, jab at somebody, no matter what, there's a part of society that just loses their mind over things like that. I thought everything they did for Brittany Griner yesterday in the ESPYs was wonderful. Yes, bring Brittany home. But why couldn't you have said, and Paul Whelan, who's a former Marine, 52 years old, has a family that's wrongfully detained in Russia as well. There's a new mural going up in D.C., including Brittany Griner and 17 other Americans. It's got their faces on this mural who are in the group that's classified as wrongfully detained. I think it's pretty powerful. And I love the fact that the WNBA, the ESPN, yes, do everything you can to get Brittany home. But could you even say the 17 others? I mean, something. Didn't sound very inclusive to me. Coming up next, I want to go through the feedback that you've given me in the last 2 weeks. Read a lot of it right here on Doug Franz Unplugged. Got some Cardinals in college football to get to a little bit later. But I've been talking about the feedback you've been giving me for a couple weeks now, and I wanted to go through some of them, give you my opinions of it, and I'm really appreciative of this. So I got this email, and it says, I'm going to call this person C, because at the end it doesn't want her name in it. So, hi, listening to your podcast for a few months and enjoying it. I have a 19-year-old nephew who will be playing for Scottsdale Community College next year. I know the basics of baseball, but I want to learn more. What is a sac fly, a walk-off home run, a fielder's choice, etc.? Do you recommend any books to help me learn about the nuances of baseball? But please, no deep dive into analytics. Do not care. Thanks. P.S. I would really like it if you would stop advocating on air for pitchers to hit batters. I don't want players, especially my nephew, to be intentionally hit. I think you give too much credit to pitchers being able to control where they can hit a player, and with the advanced knowledge we have about concussions, it's dangerous. If you read this on your podcast, please don't use my name or email. So I did a good job of not doing either. And if I shouldn't have even called you C, then I'm sorry. Let me go through your email then. Number one, the easiest way to learn is simply by watching the game and asking questions of people around you. There's going to be somebody that knows what they're talking about. I'll tell you what, because I really appreciate you listening. If your nephew, I don't know Scottsdale Community College's schedule. I don't know who community colleges play. I don't even know if there's a community college on the west side that has a team. I don't live very far away from Estrella Mountain Community College. So you look up Scottsdale Community College's baseball schedule, and whenever they have a game on the far west side, email me back some dates of games on the west side, and I'll stop by for about 3, 4, 5 innings, something like that, and I'll sit with you, and I'll explain what's going on. That'll be probably the best way for you to learn. I don't mind doing that at all. I love the game that much, and I appreciate you listening that much. But to go through your specific questions, what is a sacrifice fly? It only happens when there's a runner on third and less than 2 outs, and the batter is giving himself up by hitting a fly ball on purpose into the outfield, because you're allowed to do with what's called tagging up. So if you're standing on a base and someone catches the ball in the air, you can run. However, if you're not on a base and someone catches the ball, you have to return to the base that the at-bat started. So just for an example, you're standing on third. Somebody hits a ball into the outfield. You start running home because you think it's going to drop. Some guy makes a great catch. You're now racing back to third base. And you've got to get there before the outfielder who caught it throws to third base, and the third baseman catches the ball and steps on third. If you don't get back in time, it's a double play. But if you're standing on third the whole time, as soon as the outfielder catches the ball, you're now free to do what you want, and you can run home. The reason why a sac fly is something specific is because it doesn't count as a time at bat. There are a couple stats that aren't necessarily analytics, but I do think it's important to learn. And that is batting average, on base percentage, and slugging. And those are your, and if you ever hear somebody say your slash line, they'll give you those three numbers and it'll be in that order. Batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage. On base percentage is, it is analytics if we get into how they come up with it. So don't worry about that one. Batting average is simple. How many hits do you get versus how many times do you have an at-bat? That's what that is. And slugging percentage is the exact same thing as batting average. But imagine every extra base hit is an extra single based on how many bases. Now, if that one, if you heard that explanation, you said, what? An extra base hit is anything above a single because you got an extra base. So a double, triple, homer. Well, your slugging percentage, imagine if you went 1-for-4 with a home run. Your batting average is .250. You went 1-for-4. So therefore, it's very simple. 1 divided by 4 is .250. You batted .250. But your slugging percentage is 1,000 because you had one, you had 4 at-bats, but you got 4 total bases. So it's almost like add a single to your batting average for every base you took when you hit the ball. That's what slugging percentage is. What else? A walk-off home run. That means the home team is up to bat and the game ends as soon as they take the lead. So if you hit a home run that gives your team the lead in the last at bat, that's a walk-off home run. Almost always reserved to the bottom of the ninth inning. However, colleges will play a doubleheader. And when they play a doubleheader, they play 2 7-inning games. So you can have a walk-off homer in the bottom of the seventh or any home run in extra innings that gives the home team the lead. That's a walk-off home run. A fielder's choice. That means that it's really, that one's as simple as it sounds. The fielder's deciding who he wants to throw out. The reason why it's important is when you're keeping score, and that would be the next thing I would do see, is learn how to keep score, is anytime somebody gets on first base, there has to be a reason how they got there. Hit by pitch, BB for base on balls, which generically is called a walk. Base hit, a single. K catcher's interference. That means you swung the bat and hit the catcher's glove or hit the catcher's body. And since he got in your way, you get first base. And then you write E2 on your first base because that's how that batter got to first, on an error by the catcher. That's what catcher's interference is considered, an error. So you, a fielder's choice shows how a batter got there. So see, you're up to bat, I'm on first. You hit a ball to the shortstop. Well, the shortstop throws it to second and they step on second. I'm out. But you hustled like crazy, and when they tried to throw you out on a double play, you stepped on first before the ball got there. You're safe. Well, you don't get a base hit because you forced me to get out. So if you would have got a base hit, we'd both be safe. But since you forced me to get out, you got on by a fielder's choice. So that's what a fielder's choice is. It's how you got on base. And if you can think of any more baseball situations that you have a question on, I'd be glad. I just love the game, and I'd be glad to help you learn more. The part about advocating hitters not hit batters, or pitchers not hit batters, I am going to keep doing that because I believe in it, but your nephew is safe while he's in college. I don't believe in it in college at all. I don't believe it in the high school rank. I don't believe it in any rank but professional baseball. When baseball is now your profession, it's a little different. Number one, hitting batters on accident does happen. And it happens when you intentionally throw the ball off the inside corner. There are times a pitcher will throw a pitch that intentionally is not a strike, that isn't designed to hit the batter, but you have to get the batter off the inside corner. And the reason why, if you don't see, and I'm sorry, it's part of the game, there are pitches that are thrown down the middle that break all the way off the plate outside. So if a batter is not afraid to lean out over the plate, he can now easily reach that pitch that breaks off of the plate and he can drive it for a base hit. But if you throw one that's inside between him and the inside corner, he's less likely to be leaned out over the outside corner, and then he can't hit that pitch. So inside pitches set up outside swing and misses. Those are vitally important. There's also actually throwing at somebody, which is policing the game. And in policing the game, what happens if I run down that play at second? What if I run down and I spike your shortstop? What if I'm a dirty guy? And I run down and I put my spikes right into the ankle of the shortstop. Those are metal spikes. It's almost like little unsharpened knives, okay? It hurts like crazy. It's instantaneous blood when you get spiked. It hurts. I'm telling you, if I get spiked and I was a first baseman, I've been spiked, I want somebody to get hit. I mean, don't spike me. Stick up for me. And that's, so I have two options: turn and punch the guy and get ejected, or have my pitcher plunk him. Again, never in high school, never in college. And you know what? Now that I think about it, I don't want it in low A either. I don't want 18-year-olds doing it, 19-year-olds fresh out of high school just because they got paid. But when we get into the upper levels, upper reaches of the minors, I still believe in it. Now, if you get a chance, go back and listen to my great interview with Mike Butcher, who is the former pitching coach of the Diamondbacks and Angels. He went into a long conversation about it, and he is much more old school baseball than I am, and he's against it. So you did get what you want from him, and he's more knowledgeable than me. Doug, love the podcast. Daily listener since even before you had sponsors. I personally love every upload of the podcast because I'm already at work, and I appreciate you working so early in the morning to get us the latest info. I love the small talk and the updates and the beginning of the 4-minute offense. Very well put together. I like the expanded interviews and appreciate the in-depth explanations of plays and on the court and on the field, especially the details of that D-back bunt a couple weeks ago. Oh, that was when Josh Rojas did the 2-strike bunt. I love that too. I've learned a lot about the highs and hows and whys of basketball and baseball. Versus Vegas is fun, and I'm a minnow myself, but I like your insight to play some bets. Hey, listen, I've been crushing it in everything but baseball. I'm embarrassed about I'm not terrible at baseball, but I'm below average, and you can't be below average in anything gambling, right? I'm surprised you don't have more traditional podcast advertisers mixed in with your local sponsors. I have no idea how that works. I don't either. I'm trying to learn. The only thing I don't like about the show is the complaining after live events. I get that you're disappointed. I just don't like the long diatribe. You know, I struggle with that one because think about, your point is fair. And I've listened to them sometimes and thought, yeah, I should have been done. But that's raw emotion. That's not a diatribe. And think about how I feel that I am putting my heart and soul into this and have it taken away. When I say taken away, I mean I have to take it away. If, like, we have an event on Friday. We have an event tomorrow. We're going to be at Price Road in the 202 at the Parlay. Any member of the Unplugged Army that doesn't go is saying, I want the free podcast, but I don't want to work for it. Now, you might think I'm a jerk for saying that, but if I'm going to say blunt things that you want me to say about Robert Sarver, I'm going to be just as blunt about us. How can I keep the podcast going if Props Arizona, presented by Betfred Sports, does not keep going? I can't. And how do I impress them? I have two ways. Get a whole bunch of people to gamble, which I don't feel comfortable saying that or doing that. I have no problem talking about gambling, but I'm not going to try to talk somebody into it. Or secondly, have a large following of people that create an economic impact on businesses that go to Bell's Nashville Kitchen. Like, for an example, today I said, hey, I'm going to Bell's, on yesterday's show, I said, hey, I'm going to Bell's Nashville Kitchen. Please stop by and eat lunch if anybody wants to. Zero people stop by to say hi. Now, you could say all you want. Oh, I shouldn't read into that. I should. Why not? Like, zero? Now, I got an unbelievable tweet the other day from General Lance, who said, hey, Sunday brunch, awesome at Bell's Nashville Kitchen. But if we don't create an economic force as the Unplugged Army for different events, I don't look good in front of my bosses or the advertisers, and Unplugged goes away. And I know your life will go on, but I don't know if mine will in the same way, you know? That's why I do that. But I still accept the criticism because I did kind of go off. I'm not great with social media. I don't have a lot of followers, but I told all of my sports fan friends about your podcast. I hope word of mouth still works. It does, but not as well. But you're doing what you can. How can I complain? I mean, that's really nice of you. You're doing more than a lot of people are. Remington says, Doug, you should have Mike Jarecki on your podcast. He's very well-rounded and connected to the Valley. He, too, is a free agent. Thank you, Remington. I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. Maybe we'll get that set up. John sent me a tweet. Check out Doug Fron's Unplugged Daily podcast. Segments on daily Phoenix and Arizona sports stories. Great interviews. Plus, he's an avid beer drinker. And Doug works very hard. That's nice, John. Son's Uni Tracker then says, I appreciate the recommendation, but I was never a fan of his when he was on AZ Sports. Sorry, Son's Uni Tracker. Jackie said, I was. I didn't miss the show on my way into work because I would miss something funny Doug had to say. I haven't listened since. I think meaning to the old show since I got dumped. Jay Adams, I moved to Flagstaff. I listen to the podcast every day. I was more of a Doug fan than a Wolf fan. Happy to be in the Unplugged Army. Jay, I appreciate that in a certain way, but truth, I mean, Wolf is a dear friend. And it is a case where you didn't insult Wolf. I mean, you just said you were more of a fan of mine, but he is a brother to me, you know? So we would get that all the time. You know, you'd get people tweeting Wolf or writing Wolf what an idiot I was and Wolf needed to get away from me. And then, you know, somebody tweeting me or writing me saying I would be so much better if I didn't have Wolf in the way and stuff like that. But we were together for 15 years. I mean, if you think about that, it means we wanted to be together, you know, and wanted to stay together. Of course, the guy drove me crazy sometimes, but, you know, I stood up to him when I thought I should, if I thought that his former player attitude was going in a direction that didn't respect us as fans. But I was going at him as my brother, and other people would take that, like, yeah, you know, and no, it wasn't like that at all. So it is funny, Jay. Rip Wolf all you want, but just know that I care about him deeply. Scott the Doc, Doug's podcast is really good in my opinion. He's great without the corporate radio structure. Well, that's cool. I'm trying to do both, and I don't know if I'm doing well at it. I'm trying to bring, not this week, this is vacation week, but I'm trying to bring radio to podcasts, but still have the spirit of a podcast, you know? I think I have found something, but we'll see. Joshers, I haven't been listening to Arizona Sports since they fired Doug. Decided to listen this morning for DA news, though. Well, that was a mistake. I do laugh. I shouldn't have laughed. That shows you that I'm human. But, you know, Vince Marotta was always good to me. I don't think he did anything to stab me in the back. I mean, obviously in radio, they would have told those guys, hey, we're doing this to Doug. You're moving to mornings. And they never told me. It would have been nice. But, you know, oh well. I don't have any ill will towards them at all. Wes Whitaker, Doug, I loved the chat with Tempe's former mayor. Great info. Thank you. I was really glad I did that too. Hopefully you enjoyed getting both sides of that deal. General Lance, Doug, you're doing great. Fantastic show every day. The Costco story was classic. Don't listen to the haters. I'm certainly not repeating the Costco story. No way. But for those of you that heard it, it was about 80% of you thought it was one of the funniest things you've ever heard. And 20% of you thought I was a disgusting person for saying it. And I went over the top. Gregory sent me a tweet. How much did you exactly drink at the Henry? That was the show that I was talking about, the woman that was explaining to me that Dr. Strange is actually based on some truths and a true story, and how the different dimensions intermingle with each other at the same time. And I asked her, you know, did I get fired in the other dimensions too? She said no. So that's awesome. There's a Doug Franz that's highly successful somewhere. In another dimension. S. Kent Brown says, hey, Doug, you should have Flex from Jersey on the podcast to talk about the KD trade. He is legit, and he's been on this since May 16th. Okay. Wow, that got 29 likes. You know, I'm going to tweet now on that one. I'm sorry to do that on air right there. This is from Neil. Great show. I love the interview you had with Zach Gallen. Always liked him. And I used Parker and Sons today to fix the sinks. I love them. Oh, Neil, that's awesome. That Neil, that's general status. Please try to get out tomorrow to raise the number of stars you have as a general for using Parker and Sons. All Zen tweeted me and said, I really appreciate that you would give us an hour-long show while you're on vacation. Thank you. Gosh, what a nice thing to say. Thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome. I haven't with... It's, I would say it's about 4 hours less work without doing any of the sound. The sound is what makes it so difficult, but I'm hoping that's what makes this special and different. Josh said, Doug, I wanted to get your opinion on the teams that the Pac-12 should try to get, because I agree with you on San Diego State, but I think the other team should be Hawaii because of the Polynesian players that could be recruited and other recruits from the states to play Hawaii. I would disagree with you on that, Josh, and here's why. Although it's true, there's some fantastic Polynesian football players. I don't believe the benefit of playing Hawaii is worth that cost. Number one, Hawaii's just not very good. Number two, there's not a lot of fan support. When you see a Hawaii game on television, not a lot of people there. And Honolulu isn't that big of a market, so you're not really grabbing a market where other TV executives go, yes, now we've got Honolulu, we'll pay you this much more. The amount of money you'll make extra because you're reaching Honolulu, I think is dwarfed by the cost of getting teams to Honolulu. So I would not go after Hawaii. I don't have any, I would hate to be a Hawaii, well, I wouldn't hate to be the Hawaii athletic director. That would be kind of a good gig. But I don't know how you get a great schedule being out there. But I would not go after Hawaii because I think it's too cost prohibitive to me. I would go San Diego State, and I would beg BYU to not go to the Big 12. I'd go after them. A lot of people disagree with me on that one because that doesn't bring a new market. You've already got the Salt Lake City market with the University of Utah. Why go after BYU? That's fair, but I think it's just such a natural fit geographically and talent-wise that it makes too much sense. You need to get passion, and BYU fans have passion. And the BYU-Utah rivalry is good enough to create a passion that you don't have and create a storyline you don't have. I would go after UNLV because I think the Las Vegas market is just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I honestly think Las Vegas is what Phoenix was, what, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, something like that. I totally think Vegas is exploding. I would want UNLV. And then probably Boise State. If you don't trust Oregon and Colorado, though, if you're an ASU or U of A fan, I'm out. Then I'm going to the Big 12 now. By the way, speaking of college football, interesting situation. The UCLA situation has advanced a little bit. Governor Newsom has said UCLA must clearly explain to the public how the deal will improve the experience for all its student athletes and will honor its century-old partnership with UC Berkeley. I don't know if Governor Newsom is a good governor or a bad governor. I don't know anything about that. But I will tell you, the way he is handling this, it's so easy to read through what's going on. There's got to be millions of Cal graduates, Cal professors, people that went to Cal on the Board of Regents that are furious that UCLA is going to the Big Ten. That's what this is about. They're going to the Big Ten and they left us. Because what's interesting is the office of the president at Cal issued a statement to ESPN, not the actual president, but the office of the president, saying that they were notified about the negotiations late in the process, and that was it. And all athletic decisions are handled at the campus level, not by the president or the Board of Regents. So this is kind of the governor grandstanding. He's on the Board of Regents, but he's kind of grandstanding and trying to act like somehow he's going to block UCLA going, when an actual spokesperson for the president of the California system says, listen, this is all the athletic department. They can do what they want. And it's ridiculous of the governor to get in the way of this because UCLA is, they're in terrible athletic debt. They've run that program so poorly. They're in terrible athletic debt. And joining the Big Ten, they're going to get about $100 million a year to get themselves out of debt. Now, granted, they're going to have to spend a lot in travel now. But boy, I mean, how much is travel? When you're making about $35 million a year in the Pac-12 and you're going to jump up to $100 million a year in the Big Ten, maybe more. I think I'll deal with those travel problems. You know, hey, volleyball and cross country, why don't you hitch a ride with each other? You know, save money somehow. You can figure out how to save money, but you can't figure out how to make money if you're in a conference that your conference presidents think Larry Scott is good at his job. And that's the Pac-12. So, you know, I hate that this has happened, but if I met USC or UCLA, I would have left too. I would have left any conference that thinks Larry Scott is good at his job. And that was such a disastrous tenure. I mean, he's one of the worst college commissioners in the history of college athletics. It's a no-brainer you had to get out. My last college football thing, have you ever thought about ASU U of A playing football in Glendale? Does that grab you at all? Are there enough U of A graduates in Phoenix that it makes it fair, or is that an outrage because you take it that far away from Tucson? It's not really a neutral site. I'm asking this question because Kirby Smart, the head coach of Georgia, wants the greatest cocktail party in the world, which is the Georgia-Florida game, to be moved out of Jacksonville, Florida. They play that game in Jacksonville every year, and he doesn't want it there anymore. He wants it on campus sites, going back and forth like any other game. My opinion on rivalry games such as those, if you have a stadium nearby or a stadium that's specifically halfway, kind of like the Cotton Bowl is the old Cotton Bowl for Oklahoma, Texas, I say, why don't you rotate so college kids feel what each of them are like? So you would have a game in Athens, Georgia. The next year, the game would be in Gainesville. And the year after that, the game would be in Jacksonville, back to the neutral site. And it rotates between the three. So then every kid feels like, unless they leave after, you know, they transfer, but you always get the feeling of what was it like to play the rivalry game at home? What was it like to play the rivalry game on the road? And what was it like to have the rivalry game at a split house? And so I'm asking that because it's kind of the same thing. If I'm UCLA, USC, I would do it. I would have one game at the Rose Bowl, one game at the Coliseum, and then one game at SoFi and rotate around. Now, I realize with ASU, U of A, there might be an uproar in Tucson saying, no, that's not a neutral site being that close to Tempe. But I do feel like, at least as a talk show host in this city, there are a ton of people that get mad at me if I don't talk enough U of A, at least on the old show. It's not as bad now. But do you think that's a good idea? Do you like that? Just wondered your opinion. All right, coming up next. Do you understand what happens today? It's finally arrived. The Arizona Cardinals start training camp today. Football is back. How strange is that? The rookies report today, and then the veterans report on Tuesday. There's a new part of the CBA from about 3 years ago that you can't hit until you've been with 5 days of kind of preparation. So there's no hitting that's going to happen until, you know, deep into next week. But it is kind of crazy to think we finally got through another offseason. And there's a couple things to look at here. Number one, Kyler Murray hasn't re-signed yet. That contract extension has not been finished in negotiations. I don't think there's going to be a problem at all. You know me, I told you a long time ago, before Washington made their move for a quarterback, I would have traded Kyler Murray. We'll see if I end up being right on that. We'll never know because we don't know what the price would have been. But when you see how it's just a crazy price for as bad of a quarterback as Carson Wentz is that Washington paid. What would have been paid by Cleveland or New Orleans or Atlanta before the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes started? What would have been paid by Carolina or Washington to get a quarterback? Would the Dolphins have paid? Say, hey, we'll give you Tua and two first-round picks, something like that. And in no way am I trying to tell you that Tua is better than Kyler. He's not. I'm admitting by trading Kyler, you need to go get a quarterback. And Tua, if you take Tua, you need to go get a quarterback. I told you that when Tua Tagovailoa came out of the draft. So I was in favor of that. I'm not now. Now you're in this mess. You got to go through with it. I just think you should never have paid Cliff Keim and Kyler. I would have made them all come into this year on the final year of their deals, and let's see what happens. And then paid them like crazy if the season was a success. But that's something to look out for, that Kyler still has not picked up his new contract yet. And then Deebo Samuel, there's no deal. And Tom Pelissero is reporting from NFL Network that nothing is imminent. So he's under contract, but it's the last year of his rookie deal, which isn't going to pay him nearly as much as he's earned in this hybrid running back wide receiver position. So is he a bad guy if he doesn't do what the coaches say? what if the coaches say, I want you to play both positions? And he says, well, then give me a raise. And they say, no, you're already under contract. Do your job. That's a tough one. I am one that says, you signed that deal. You know, you signed that deal. But I would be doing everything I can to get out. but I don't see a deal there. And then listen to this story about Germany. If you don't know, the Seahawks play the Bucks in Munich this year. And expensive seats were being sold at around $200. They're already sold out a couple hours after Ticketmaster opened up. Some people took screenshots of their Ticketmaster page that said, you're in the queue and there are 2 million other fans ahead of you. 2 million people. You're in 2 millionth place in line to get a ticket. And the expensive seat that I told you that was around 200, it's on, there's been a pair that were resold for $33,000. That's how crazy Germany is for football. That is going to change things. There are going to be a lot more games in Germany, without a doubt. And the last story today is pretty special. Pretty special. There's a woman named Jennifer Simpson. She's a Houston Texans fan. She sent out a tweet that says, anybody interested in buying a pair of JJ Watt ladies workout shoes, size 9, and an @JJ Watt Texans jersey? Please let me know. My grandfather recently died and we're raising money for the funeral. Since she tagged JJ Watt, he saw it. He tweeted her back and said, please keep the shoes and the jersey if you're interested. Let me help with Grandpa. Sorry for your loss. This guy doesn't quit. JJ Watt is amazing. Hopefully, I'll see you tomorrow on the East Side at the Parlay.